Good morning. It's 8:06. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. I'm Parker Malatesta, filling in for Leslie Thatcher on this Monday, January 27th. It's a chilly one in the Wasatch back this morning, but looks like things will be sunny and will warm up later today. On the phone with me to talk more about the weather, I've got Nate Larson, meteorologist with ABC4.
Hey, good morning, Parker. This is Cedric Haynes actually joining you this morning. Yes, I'm first day back, but getting back to a frigid start here this morning across most of the area, including the Wasatch Back. Temperatures are in the single digits, close to zero in some spots. In fact, at the Heber Airport, I know we had a temperature last hour at 0 degrees. So we are definitely going to be seeing a warming trend, but it's not going to necessarily mean it's going to be warm today. We'll see lots of sunshine. High temperatures in Park City will probably climb into the upper 20s to right around 30 degrees for a high. In the Heber Valley, we're talking high temperatures climbing into the low to mid 30s, maybe slightly above freezing by late this afternoon. But make sure you are bundled up because, it's not going to get much warmer than that as we go throughout the day. Now, as we go into tonight with clear skies and light winds again, guess what? Those temperatures are going to drop off once again for us. So that means overnight low temperatures by tomorrow morning as you kick off your Tuesday in Park City will be down close to about 10 degrees in the city. But notice as you get into the Heber Valley where you get outside of the cities there, we're talking temperatures likely back into the single digits around 5-6 degrees for tomorrow morning. High temperatures should rebound back into the mid-30s in both Park City and Heber Valley as we go into your Tuesday afternoon. But still, that's below average for this time of the year. And we've got more of the same heading into your Wednesday with high pressure in charge. And right overhead, we're not going to see much change. Overnight lows into the single digits and teens in the Wednesday morning with highs in the mid to upper 30s across most of the Wasatch Back. Now, as we get into the latter half of the week, we will see a little more sunshine, a few more clouds building in with a southerly wind. But that'll boost those temperatures into the low to mid 40s for highs by the time we get towards your Thursday and Friday. So some slight warmer weather heading our way, but it's going to be kind of a chilly start for the next several days, so get ready for that. But as we head into your Friday, that will be the warmest day of the week, but also a few more clouds. We'll call it partly cloudy skies in both Park City and in Heber with temperatures climbing into the 40s. But then as we get into the weekend, our next storm system begins to approach. And very similar to the past couple of weekends with our storm systems that move through, they're not going to have a ton of moisture to work with, but they will produce at least some decent mountain snow chances here as we go throughout your Saturday and Sunday. And even in the Heber Valley, could likely see some rain and snow showers kind of scattered through the area on our Saturday afternoon and the Saturday night. And that may extend even into your Sunday. So we'll be fine-tuning the details on that system. But that's when our next weather maker arrives. Between now and then, it's all about the frigid temperatures and the hazy sunshine. So, Parker, make sure you got multiple layers on over the next few days.
Will do. Appreciate you, Cedric. Have a good week.
You too. Thank you so much.
Thanks. And now with an update from the Utah Avalanche Center, I've got Nikki on the line.
Morning.
Morning.
So yesterday, under the sunny skies, there were several avalanches reported across the Salt Lake area mountains. Most of these averaged 1 to 2 feet deep and failed in wind-drifted snow, either sitting on top of a density change or some small grain facets. The primary issue right now are those two wind-related problems. So we're seeing both some shallow, soft slabs of wind-drifted snow from this weekend's winds, and then additionally, the strong winds over the past week have formed widespread hard slabs of wind-drifted snow that are sitting on top of those small grain facets. These slabs are highly sensitive and are most common on north through east facing slopes, but they can be found on all aspects due to the high winds. Today, we've got a moderate danger on all upper elevations and mid elevation slopes facing west, north, and east. It's possible to trigger old hard slabs or newly formed shallow soft slabs of wind-drifted snow. And today, some of those typical signs of wind-drifted snow, like the textured surfaces, might be hidden under this weekend's recent snow. So give extra caution to ridgelines, subridges, and other features that could act as a catch.
All right. Thanks, Nikki. Getting into some local news, Governor Spencer Cox and other Utah elected officials welcomed the 2025 Sundance Film Festival Saturday night. KPCW's Christine Weller reports they attended a screening of Train Dreams.
Salt Lake City Mayor Aaron Mendenhall, other Utah leaders, and Sundance Film Institute leaders gathered Saturday for the first audience screening of Train Dreams. Cox said Utah's leaders always try to kick off Sundance.
It's a huge deal for our state. Over the past 15 years, economically, it's brought in about $1.3 billion in economic benefits to the state. But that's not why we love Sundance. We just love movies, and we love storytelling.
Cox has been vocal about Sundance's decision to solicit bids from other cities as the festival considers moving away from Utah in 2027. At his monthly news conference with reporters, the governor said he thought it would be a huge mistake for the festival to leave the state after more than 40 years. Organizers cited financial pressures and a lack of accessibility in Park City as reasons to move. In the fall, they said they had narrowed the list of interested cities to three finalists, a dual bid of Park City and Salt Lake City, Boulder, Colorado, and Cincinnati, Ohio. At the screening Saturday, Cox said he and other elected officials have been looking forward to viewing Train Dreams. The film follows the life of Robert Grainier, a day laborer building America's railroads at the start of the 20th century. He experiences profound love, shocking defeat, and a world transforming before his very eyes. Joel Edgerton, who plays Grainier, said the story is a study of a man's life.
Kind of speaks to all of us in all of our lives, in the sense that I feel like all of our lives are significant. We all contribute to the world that we live in some way, big or small, and we'll all probably be forgotten within a generation or two, but somehow our lives are also very important.
Train Dreams will make audiences laugh and cry as it explores the life of an ordinary man. Cox said the story reminded him of a quote from Middlemarch by George Eliot. He said the quote speaks to who we are and to the purpose of Sundance.
He wrote this: "The growing good of the world is partly dependent on unhistoric acts, and that things are not so ill with you and me as they might have been is half owing to the number who live faithfully a hidden life and rest in unvisited tombs."
Clint Bentley directed Train Dreams. His directorial debut, Jockey, premiered at the 2021 Sundance Film Festival and won a special jury prize for Best Actor. He also co-wrote Sing Sing, which has three Oscar nominations. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
I'm now joined in studio by Park City Special Events Manager Chris Finney and Transportation Director Tim Sanderson. How's it going today?
Morning.
Hey, morning, Parker.
Yeah, we're here to debrief just some of the Sundance operations this weekend. Chris, I think the thing that's obvious to start with is, about a week ago, Police Chief Wade Carpenter said they made the public safety decision to close down Main Street. We went with a pedestrian-only Main Street this weekend. I mean, generally, what was the reaction you got?
All positive. Everyone, all the attendees, anyone I talked to on the street was just really happy to be able to walk up the street with all the activations and the lights and be able to take pictures in front of the Egyptian. It was really, really a positive feedback for sure.
Yeah, and I can definitely corroborate that. I was out on the street on Friday and pretty much heard unanimous positive reviews on the experience. I guess the question is, can we keep it forever?
So the plan is for us to remove everything tomorrow, so okay. It won't be forever.
Not
so we
forever.
Go back to normal operations tomorrow, probably afternoon. It'll take us a little bit to remove all the safety barriers and everything in place. But yeah, the plan is tomorrow for everything to go back to normal.
Okay, so the road will close down again today around noon, that's correct?
That's correct, yep. Same plan as we've had since Thursday of last week.
Yeah, and I guess just talking about the rest of the Old Town area, the restrictions on Sweet Alley and Park Avenue, will those remain in place through the full festival despite the Main Street change?
Yes, we'll be trying to protect the residents still, all the neighborhoods. It'll still be one way north going on Park Ave. All the other checkpoints will be in place up in the Old Town area. So Hillside, King, Daly, all that will still be in place. But everything on Sweet Alley will go back to normal. Everything on Main Street will go back to normal. Lower Main, et cetera.
Yeah, and just operationally, I mean, any challenges just dealing with other stuff closing down the road, or just, I mean, any challenges on just the other side of making it happen?
I think there's that balance between trying to protect the residents and letting the residents through, so making sure everyone has their access passes. And so we had a little bit of chasing our tail with that one, but we handled it pretty well, I think.
Yeah, I guess, Tim, turning to you, I know the city, you know, was really pushing the Richardson Flat Park and Ride to get people to park out by 40 coming to town. I mean, how did that go?
It was amazing out there. Our Our average capacity on that was up about 20% over last Sundance, which is awesome. And for a lot of the time, especially during those peak periods, we're looking at about 75% to 80% occupancy at Richardson Flats. So 450 cars, 500 cars sometimes, which is amazing. Taking those many cars off the road really helps everybody get around.
Yeah, and I know you said you're still waiting on specific data, but just any other anecdotal ridership things you took in, just even on the other routes outside of Richardson Flat?
I rode quite a few buses over the last few days, and I didn't get on one that wasn't packed. Virtually all of the buses were packed, and I think that it's a really good proof of concept to show that when you make transit convenient, people will ride it.
I saw one that was decently packed and I was almost surprised not to see more. I mean, is there ever a conversation that there is a need to add more supply, just buses, in terms of when there's big special events like this? Or do you feel the city's at a good equilibrium right now in terms of what they can provide?
We basically add the capacity that we have.
Yeah.
You know, so we do add a considerable amount of service. We make sure everything is maintained so nothing breaks down, because that can really throw us in a loop. And we staff up a little bit for the event. So we're really do. Oh, and we add LaBusson as well.
Yeah, right.
So we do add some service to it. Not having enough bus service is always a really good problem to have when the demand is outpacing our capacity. So definitely something we're working on.
Yeah, and Chris, how did that the drop-off setup work there on Lower Main by the town lift?
I think it worked very well. My transportation team down there put a great operations plan together, had everyone pulling through. The thing that worked very well is we had heaters and other things and all the attractions that were down there. So all the festival goers were able to get out in sort of a airport-style drop-off. And then, you know, we flushed everyone out down Park Ave. So we had a little bit of congestion for some of those ride shares that were in there. But overall, for the festival attendees, I think it worked very well.
Yeah. Has the city used that, like, design before?
This is the first time. So when we all followed Chief Wade Carpenter's advice, we got our heads together. And actually, Andrew Latham drew up that whole thing. He did a great job. And it's worked very well.
And so will that stay in place through Sunday or when?
Nope, everything gets pulled, like I said,
on tomorrow.
Tuesday. Yep.
Okay. Any other changes we should highlight for tomorrow or just later this week?
No, I think everything. The festival still goes through Sunday, so you know, still come up and attend all the film screenings and all the other activities. But as for transportation plans, that'll all get pulled tomorrow and go back to normal procedure. Except for, like I said, Park Ave will remain one way north. In the old town areas will still be protected from cut-throughs.
Yeah, and I did Richardson Flat, those buses, those 10-minute buses, those are running the full through Sunday, correct?
That's correct, yeah.
And I was told by a rider out there, you guys had set up some bathrooms, a portable bathroom, so you got a little something there. Is maybe the end goal to maybe try to build some more facilities or have something there?
You know, having a few more amenities out there is definitely something that would be appreciated. But we do have they're portable washrooms, but they're heated and they're enclosed, so they're actually not too bad. And we were also handed out snacks and hand warmers as well at times during the weekend as well.
Yeah, and I did just want to turn it back to the Main Street, Chris. You know, I understand it's a policy decision that kind of falls on the hands of the council. But just, I mean, operationally, is that something you think the city can do consistently in terms of what was required to make it happen? Or was it a really big load to make it all work for this event?
Going forward or just?
Just going forward, yeah.
For everyday use or?
Not for everyday, but for any kind of event. Or right. What was the workload that had to go into getting those barricades there and making that all happen?
It's a lot of work. We have staff members coming in at 4 a.m. using heavy equipment to move those Jersey barriers. It's definitely labor intensive. It's something that I think going forward we'll be able to do a little more smoothly. We learned a lot as we came through all of this, and I think we'll be able to reproduce it if desired.
Yeah, any of those lessons you want to highlight just in terms of maybe things that were good takeaways from this experiment?
You know, I think the challenges are trying to get people where they need to go and still have all of our safety equipment in place. You know, getting the right passes to the right people, things like that. So I would say, operationally, I think it really went well from the city side. So any of the transportation operation plans that were in place, all the safety measures, I think worked really well. We did have the one protest on Saturday, and it helped in that.
Makes
that
it easier
as well.
Yeah,
yes,
for you don't
sure.
have to stop the cars.
Right. But any lessons, I think, maybe a little further out planning than a week and a half.
Yeah, more music. I that's the one experience I wanted to highlight. I was walking down from the Egyptian last night. They had a DJ going on the No Name roof, and there was a whole crowd of people dancing on Main Street along with the people on the roof, and it was very cool. So I just thought it created quite an experience on Main I have not seen before. But anything else you guys want to mention, just going ahead with the Sundance Film Festival through Sunday, any other changes or things you think people should know?
You know, I would just say if anybody's planning on going to any of the films, best way to get there is the bus. Mm-hmm. So even though the traffic's going to be considerably better for the next week, still, it's every time you take the bus, it's one less car off the road.
All right. Anything else, Chris?
I would agree with Tim.
All right.
Even though we're pulling our drop and load areas in some of the downtown areas, we still have limited parking in China Bridge at times, heavy ski traffic coming in and out. So mixing with that and some of the nice fresh snow and the sun's out, I can see us, still having some traffic issues. So plan ahead, get on transit.
Yeah.
And don't be, be part of the solution and not the problem.
Yeah. I did lastly just want to ask how just access to Old Town businesses and deliveries were with that, because I know that was maybe a concern just with the Main Street closure. How did that work out, kind of doing that in the early morning?
It went well. I'm actually looking at someone loading in right now. So we really got with the merchants, thanks to the HPCA for also getting the word out. Ginger did amazing with that. So we were open every day from 4 a.m. to noon. And then afterwards, we made a little bit of adjustments if needed for, people loading out. But I think that went pretty smooth. We didn't really end up with a big, semi coming in the Sweet Alley after noon and having to hustle around. So I think everything went well.
All right. Well, I appreciate you two coming in and keeping us briefed. Have a good one.
Thanks, Porter.
Thanks.
We've been speaking with Park City Special Events Manager Chris Finney and Transportation Director Tim Sanderson on Sundance Film Festival operations. A bill introduced in the Utah House would allow cities and counties to let developers build more affordable housing. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports on the optional density bonus.
Taylorsville Republican Representative Jim Dunnigan's House Bill 37 would create what's called an affordable housing density overlay. If it's passed as drafted, cities and counties will be able to let developers build more density as long as those units are restricted for moderate income earners and owner-occupied for up to 5 years. The density bonus, proposed at 8 units per acre, would apply to any zone in the state where housing is allowed. The bonus is optional, meaning governments don't have to ask for more density if they don't want to. But if they do, they're allowed to deny projects that can't deliver it. A quirk of the law, according to Summit County Chief Civil Deputy Attorney Dave Thomas, is which income limits apply to the bonus housing.
The AMI that they want to use is not specific to a county or a city, but rather to a metropolitan area. So the fact that Summit County may have a higher AMI, we would be attached to, right now, Utah County. And so it would be that AMI, so it'd be a lower rate, right?
And a lower area median income means far lower rent than other housing projects around the Park City area. It's unclear if developers could turn a profit on that kind of affordable housing in Summit County, where the AMI for a family of four is more than $150,000. HB 37 hasn't been introduced on the House floor yet. The House Political Subdivisions Committee must approve it first. Sometimes Summit County takes a position on bills during the legislative session. It has yet to take a position on HB 37. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
I'm now joined over the phone by U.S. Ski and Snowboard spokesperson Courtney Harkins. How's it going today, Courtney?
Hey, Parker. It's going really well. How are you?
I'm great. I guess to start things off, I understand there's a lot to report on with the Alpine team. They've been busy. If you could tell us what's been going on there.
Yeah, of course. They have been busy. We are just getting back from Europe, or I'm just getting back from Europe while the team is over there and just racing a ton. They're on fire, which has been awesome to see. Park guy Lauren Masuga won her first World Cup, which is so exciting, in St. Anton. And then she's had great results since then. So keep an eye on her as she brings more wins back to our hometown. And the women in general are performing really well. Paula Moltzen just podiumed in Kronplatz, Italy. As everyone has seen, Lindsey Vonn is back and continuing to stack up great results. Breezy Johnson is skiing well. And the exciting news on the women's side as well is that Michaela Schifrin is officially coming back this week, on Thursday, in a race in Courchevel, France.
And so what has Schifrin been struggling with? Has that been an injury?
Yeah, she, at the Killington World Cup, the Stiefel Killington Cup, she had a pretty well-documented crash, and ended up with a 7-centimeter puncture wound in her abdomen.
Wow.
So it's been a pretty brutal recovery, but she's been doing really well and is back on snow and back in gates and feels comfortable to come back to the World Cup this weekend. So hopefully we'll see her 100th World Cup win at some point soon.
Yeah, and I understand you just wrapped up, I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly, but Kitzbühel.
Kitzbühel.
I understand that's regarded as the Super Bowl of ski racing. I was wondering if you could tell me why.
Yeah, it is massive. I actually just landed last night back from Kitzbühel. I had never been before, and it is just remarkable. I mean, tens and tens of thousands of rowdy fans.
Wow.
Screaming on the side of the hill for the downhill. It is the hardest track on the circuit, and it is so steep, it is so icy, it is so rowdy, but it's really fun, and the guys are so excited to have this crowd. The Austrians love ski racing. It's a massive party. So if anyone gets a chance to go over to this race, I highly recommend it.
Yeah, and so what's up next for the Alpine team?
So next, after Courchevel, we have the World Championships. So this is something that happens every other year in non-Olympic years. The athletes will be competing for medals. It's not a World Cup, so you know, if Michaela Schifrin wins, it's not our 100th World Cup win, but it's pretty much second tier to the Olympics and the Alpine in all FIS sports. So look out for a lot of the U.S. Athletes to be going for you know, big medals, and it should be exciting. It's in Saalbach, Austria this year, so should be good.
Yes. Moving on to cross country, I understand Jessie Diggins continues to dominate.
She does. Jessie just, you know, with her smile and her sparkles, continues to land on the podium. She's had 5 podiums this season. She just finished 3rd in the Tour de Ski, which is a cool version of the Tour de France, but for cross country. So they race from, you know, stage to stage in different locations. This year it was all around Italy, but in the past it's gone through a number of different countries, and it's a fun series of races. So 3rd is great for her. She's won it a couple of times. We'll continue to see her do well as they head into their World Championships in a few weeks.
And anything on the men's side in cross country to highlight?
Yeah, we've had some good results. Notably, Ben Ogden had a podium in France, I think last week. It was his first distance podium, so he's podiumed before in sprint races. But this was an exciting one for the Vermonter to snag an official podium.
Yeah. Well, moving on to freestyle, we've obviously got our World Cup here at Deer Valley coming up in about 2 weeks, I believe. But what has the freestyle team been up to recently leading up to this event?
Yeah, we're so excited to have our Intermountain Health Freestyle International this year. It is coming up on February 6th through 8th. So we've had some really good results from the Stiefel US Moguls team and the aerials team, which is great. The aerialists were just in Lake Placid, and then they were in Canada this weekend. Chris Lillis, who lives in Salt Lake, was 3rd. And then Karenna Elliott, who I believe lives around here as well, was 2nd. And then the mogul skiers were just in Waterville Valley, New Hampshire. It was very cold, but we had some really great results. Jalen Koff, who lives in Salt Lake, had 2 podiums, both in dual moguls and in the individual moguls. And then Olivia Giaccio had 1 in the individuals. And then Park City's own Nick Page, who's sponsored by Deer Valley, one of our, you know, hometown favorites, had a podium as well. So that puts him in a really good spot to to hopefully podium in front of the home crowd at Deer Valley.
Yeah, well, super excited for that event, as always. And then, you know, as Park City was in Sundance mode this last weekend, Aspen was in X Games mode. so I know Americans had a lot of success there at the event this week. What stood out to you?
I think the most exciting moment was probably the podium sweep in the men's freeski halfpipe. Nick Gepper, who is a three-time Olympic medalist in slopestyle, which is the one where they go off like jumps and rails, has made a switch over to halfpipe, which is really cool and kind of unprecedented in the sport.
Yeah.
And he won his first X Games gold, and it was a really huge moment. But followed closely behind with Alex Ferreira, who's from Aspen, so a hometown crowd, in second, and then Hunter Hess in third. So it was a really cool, a great moment for U.S. halfpipe skiing.
Yeah, more about then, on the snowboard side.
Yeah, on the snowboard side, the really exciting part was Chloe Kim winning her, I think it was her eighth X Games gold. Wow. Fact check me on that one, but I'm pretty sure it was her eighth. And it's the most halfpipe golds in history, which is just huge. And then her teammate, Maddie Mastro, who's also on the Hydro Flask U.S. snowboard team, with Chloe, took silver. So it was pretty cool and exciting. And X Games is just still one of the biggest events in the snowboard freeski world.
Yeah, and just for those athletes in particular, they have any events upcoming to look forward to?
Yeah, they do. The rest of the snowboard and freeski team is descending on Aspen right around now. We have a World Cup that's coming up this coming week. It's the Toyota U.S. Grand Prix and the Visa Big Air. That are happening over at Aspen, and then the snowboarders, even after that, stay longer in Aspen because they have the Snow League, which is Sean White's new league. So it's a lot of time in Aspen for our snowboarders this year.
Yeah. Well, moving on, what can you tell us about our para winter athletes? What are they up to this winter?
Yeah, para athletes have been doing really well. We actually just saw the para alpine team in Kitzbühel. They were out training there and were cheering on all of our alpine skiers, which is really our able-bodied alpine skiers, which is really exciting. But para snowboard has continued to dominate as well. Brenna Huckabee had three podiums over the last week. She's you know, well documented as, I think, the most successful para snowboarder of all time. Young Kate Delton, who is Team Utah, had her first World Cup win this year in Lenk, Switzerland. And then Mike Schultz and Noah Elliott both had a couple of podiums as well. So that team is just, you know, continuing to be on fire, which we love.
Yeah, and I also saw that we have the Huntsman Cup coming up at Park City Mountain. I believe that is next weekend or February 3rd through 6th. So that event.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a good chance to go watch some para alpine skiing, and some of the best years in the world will come to this. So head over to Park City Mountain to go see that. And then if you are going to be in Colorado at all, we have a Paris Snowboard World Cup coming to Steamboat. It's the first time in many years that we've had a Paris Snowboard World Cup in the U.S. So we're
very cool.
Yeah, we're pretty thrilled to have them.
Well,
to have them in the States.
Yeah, it sounds like you all have been quite busy. Anything else you want to mention, Courtney?
Yeah, we hope that we'll see all of you guys in Deer Valley next week. We will have a really cool opportunity there to sign up for our Insider Fan Club. You can become an official member of the U.S. Ski and Snowboard Team Club. There's lots of great swag and lots of great opportunities for a good space to watch the Deer Valley World Cup, which I know can always be a little tricky because we get 10,000 people there on dual moguls nights. So it's a good opportunity for that. So check out our website if you wanna sign up. It's a pretty nominal fee and gets you a lot of great perks for being a fan of the U.S. Ski and Snowboard team.
All right. Well, thanks so much for keeping us updated, Courtney. Have a great week.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, Parker.
We've been speaking with U.S. Ski and Snowboard spokesperson Courtney Harkins. Getting back into some news, Utah was awarded the 2034 Winter Olympics almost 6 months ago. KPCW's Christine Weller has more on one woman who was instrumental in bringing the games back to the Beehive State.
Catherine Rainey Norman played a significant role in successfully bringing the Olympics back to Utah. She was the chair of Utah's Olympic Bid Committee, working with her team for over a decade ahead of the July 2024 announcement the games would return. Throughout her time on the bid committee, Norman focused on athletes to ensure they and their families would have support if the games came back to Utah. It's an emphasis born out of Norman's own experience. She's a four-time Olympic speed skater. Norman grew up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and started as a figure skater, aspiring to be like her big sister. Norman said she would get up early before school to practice her jumps on the inside of the rink while short track skaters looped around her.
I was like 12 years old, and these 19 and 20-year-old boys challenged me to a race, and so I raced them, and I won. And they went up to my mom, and they were like, she's pretty good. She should think about speed skating.
Norman ultimately traded her figure skates for the long, wide blades of speed skates and a new passion. She went on to win the U.S. All-Around Championship 6 times and set 3 U.S. records. She also competed in the 1998, 2002, 2006, and 2010 Winter Olympics. She said her favorite was the 2002 Games in Utah.
Coming from a small sport like speed skating, where if we're lucky if we have 100, 200 fans that come out for an event, to then come to Utah and compete here and have stadiums full, you know, 6,000, 6,500 fans in the stands cheering USA nonstop.
Norman said it was also a special privilege to compete in the games in the U.S.
I remind people, prior to 2002, the games were held in 1980 in Lake Placid, which I wasn't even born at that time, right? And I'm sure we have a couple of folks who are looking at 2034 saying, I wasn't even born in 2002. And so it's really a special, privileged opportunity to compete in your home country.
After retiring, Norman took a coaching gig to help a former teammate who was a Park City Speed Skating Club coach. He asked her to fill in for him temporarily, but Norman said she eventually inherited the club. She helped grow the program, which then was mostly comprised of adults. Over 7 years, Norman shifted the club's focus to kids. In the process, she trained a new generation of professional speed skaters, including Casey Dawson, who competed in the 2022 Olympics.
I'm so grateful to have been able to do that and to work with those families. And I still reference them as my kids, even though they're like grown adults. And I still follow them all to see how they're doing.
In addition to coaching, Norman has supported athletes in many other ways. She got involved in athlete advocacy in 2008, eventually becoming the vice chair of the Team USA Athletes Commission. There, she worked to provide athletes with comprehensive health care and opportunities outside their Olympic sports. That also included helping athletes transition from podiums to more traditional careers by identifying and capitalizing on the skills they learned in competitive sports. Norman's passion for advocacy translated well when she started helping Utah plan a bid to back the games. Talk about a bid began in 2010, but Norman said things ramped up in 2018 when the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee designated Salt Lake City as America's choice for the Winter Games. She was named the chair of the Utah Olympic Bid Committee in 2021. Since Utah already has its venues ready to go, she said it was the perfect opportunity for the team to think bigger.
Because we have such a strong foundation from 2002, because we have our venues in place, because we have a knowledgeable workforce around sport and events, we can really think about bigger opportunities.
The theme for the 2034 Games is Elevate. Elevate sport, communities, and athletes. Norman's focus, of course, was on elevating athletes. She spent the last 3 years meeting with athletes to understand how to improve their experience.
The resounding piece of feedback has been, please help our families. So often athletes, they qualify for a games 3-4 weeks in advance of the team showing up in the country, or families are trying to sort of roll the dice a bit, like maybe we should go in and get tickets and hotels, but we don't know if our child is going to make it. That causes a lot of stress for the athlete and for the families.
That's why Utah's Olympic team is partnering with the University of Utah to provide lodging for athletes and their families in the Olympic Village. Norman said this also aligns with Utah's values, as the Beehive State is family-focused. Norman and Utah's Olympic Bid Committee also prioritized opportunities to involve Utahns. They brainstormed Project 29, an initiative aiming to bring sports and Olympic and Paralympic values to youth in all of Utah's 29 counties. The bid committee had its final meeting in December 2024 and has since been dissolved. An Olympic organizing committee is in the process of being formed. The new committee will likely consist of many of the members from the bid committee, including Norman. The organizing committee will be announced in the coming months. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
I'm now joined in studio by Park City Chamber Bureau CEO Jennifer Wesselhoff. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning, Parker. Happy Sundancing.
Yes, happy Monday Sundancing. I guess that's obviously the first thing to touch on. I mean, in general, what have you heard from businesses this last weekend? I mean, especially with the Main Street closure.
They're busy.
Yeah.
They're very busy. They're excited. I think the vibe on Main Street and in all of town is just super positive. Mm-hmm. I think we're all trying to put our best foot forward to make sure that Sundance feels loved and valued, and we're really excited to have them here.
Yeah, and I understand the chamber worked on part of just getting some music together for the Main Street area. Can you kind of talk about why you felt that was important to kind of activate the space a little bit?
Yeah, you know, the decision to close Main Street for pedestrian access only happened pretty late, and we mm-hmm. felt and heard from the businesses just some concern around keeping energy on the street and keeping people excited and keeping our businesses thriving during that time. So we worked really closely with the city, with Ginger at HPCA, and also Brian Richardson at Mountain Town Music, who really spent most of the holiday weekend last weekend putting together the schedule of great musicians all around Main Street, just to keep the energy alive. And I felt it. I know you were on Main Street yesterday or Sunday, and you felt it. Yeah, it's really an incredible experience when you can sort of festivalize the Main Street district and really keep that energy high and keep people wanting to come back.
Yeah, it definitely seemed like the music added a nice touch to the whole vibe on Main Street. Obviously, the big other topic of discussion with the festival, along with the Main Street closure, is the fact that mm-hmm. Sundance is going through this bid process and is considering a move starting in 2027. Is the chamber at all involved in, you know, those negotiations, whatnot, to keep Sundance in Utah?
We are. We're part of a united statewide team that includes the governor and Utah legislators. It includes the Utah Office of Tourism, the Film Commission, Park City and Summit County, also the city and county of Salt Lake, and of course Visit Salt Lake. We're all working really closely to put together a bid. You know, obviously we're in the final three. In fact, we saw folks from Cincinnati and also Boulder here this weekend, kind of experiencing the festival and getting an idea of the vibe as well. But we're really proud of the bid that we put together in conjunction with Salt Lake. And we're confident that Sundance really sees that our DNAs are so intertwined, and the success of Park City and Utah is really also the success of Sundance, and vice versa. So we're really proud of that bid. The bid is really kind of bringing Salt Lake City more into the footprint. Some of the concerns that we've heard early on and really weren't a surprise to us is just mm-hmm. the general cost
yeah.
Here in Park City, particularly with the over 800 people that they house as part of their staff and volunteers and contract workers. So trying to find a way to really address their needs but still have a really strong footprint in Park City and partner with Salt Lake. I think we've done a good job, and we're looking forward to the decision in springtime.
Yeah, and Boulder and Cincinnati obviously being the two other cities that Sundance is considering a move to. Moving on, Jennifer, I believe this is the first time you've been on since the strike at Park City Mountain happened late last month, early January. You know, I just wanted, I think, the question I wanted to ask is in this scenario where there's a, you know, a labor dispute between a company and its workers, what do you feel the role of the chamber is in that scenario?
I appreciate that question, Parker, and it's not the first time that we've gotten it. You know, we weren't at the negotiating table,
yeah.
So there was a lot of information and details and complexities that we weren't aware of. You know, I think our role as the destination manager and the destination marketer is to really just communicate mm-hmm. about what's happening in the community, make sure our businesses are aware of what's happening and being prepared to react when the time is right. I felt very strongly that it wasn't our role to take a position in the strike, especially because there was just so much information that we don't know. And, you know, when we look at the potential impacts of that, we're not quite, we don't have any data right now that really shows that strike had any impacts. You know, we also keep track of other things that might have impacts on our community, particularly like the California fires. You know, LA is one of our biggest markets. We also know that a lot of folks from LA come to Park City in Utah for Sundance.
Yeah.
And we're hearing mixed messages about that. You know, we're hearing that some people from California have canceled their trip to Park City and to Sundance, but we're also hearing that many others have extended their stays.
Interesting.
So it really won't be until the numbers come out that we'll know what those impacts have had. Unfortunately, the numbers that I have are only through the end of December. And once we get the next round of reporting, which really should come out any day now, we'll have a better idea of how January is performing. But right now, as of the end of December, December was up about 1%. And January was also, you know, reservations on the books were up about 1%. Rates were up about 2%. And really looking forward to February and March, our pace for reservations on the books are up double digits. February right now is up 15% and March is up 11%. What's interesting is I reached out to my counterparts in some of our sort of competitive destinations.
Ski towns.
Vail and Sun Valley, Tahoe, Big Sky. And I was asking them sort of what their mid-January was looking like. Mm-hmm. You know, we always see some softness between sort of that first weekend of January with the New Year holiday and softness between that and Martin Luther King holiday. And they were seeing that too. So I was just kind of checking the pulse of how we're performing compared to them. They're seeing exactly the same softness that we're seeing. We're actually seeing some better performance for February and March as of January. But we're also seeing a really short booking window.
So people are booking, they're thinking of the trip and they're booking instantly or the next
7 days in advance, which is a little unusual. Yeah. You know, normally you plan an overnight trip out of state, especially if it's, you know, involving a flight at least 2 or 3 weeks in advance. But I think what we're seeing is just a lot of people following the snow.
Okay.
And booking where it's snowing. So I think we need to pray to our snow gods.
Definitely. Any numbers to report just on tax collections?
The most recent tax collections came out from Summit County, and that actually represents the entire year.
Oh, wow.
So we're really pleased to see that every single tourism-related category for Summit County tax collections are up. The local sales taxes finished the year up almost 4%. Our restaurants are performing well and performed well for all of 2024. They were up almost 6%. Our transient room tax for the year up almost 7%. And then that recreation arts and parks tax up almost 5% for the year. So overall, a really strong 2024 for tourism and our small businesses.
Now, anything you attribute that to? Just the strong yearly gains? It does feel like a very strong increase.
You know, I think during COVID, we saw some double-digit increases. And, you know, there were some anomalies in that. You know, we saw some really strong months and some really slower months over 2024. I think it's just our continued messaging. You know, we launched Mountain Kind, our new brand, in May this year, and we did a really strong push in our target markets for our summer campaign. We're also out there promoting our winter campaign in Mountain Kind for this winter campaign. And we work really hard to keep Park City and Summit County out there, you know, some people have said, you know, do we really need to market Park City anymore? And and the reality is that there's so much competition for that very coveted winter ski snowboard market that we have to remain competitive. And I think that our team's doing a really great job getting stories written about Park City and Summit County, especially the types of stories that we want to tell, the type of people that we are, the importance of our values and our culture and our history and our great snow and our great mountains. And we work really hard year-round to make sure that we can sustain a really strong tourism economy.
Yeah, I did just briefly want to update Parley's Canyon drivers. I-80 westbound, there was an accident reported right there at Lamps Canyon at exit 127. It's being cleared now, but it is still backed up there around Lamps Canyon. That's westbound I-80. Jennifer, I've been getting a lot of questions, and I understand you might not have loads of data in front of you right now, but just a lot of questions of how important is Sundance to our economy? How much does it represent? What would losing it mean? I mean, just even anecdotally from what you hear from businesses, I mean, what do you feel like this two-week festival represents for our economy here in Park City?
You know, we have such a deep love and respect for Sundance. You know, hearing the stories about 40 years ago when Sundance came here to Park City, the chamber was really instrumental in helping them get established. Cool. I remember hearing stories about Tina Lewis hand painting banners and signs, and the chamber staff, we sold tickets out of a double-decker bus at the grocery store for them. And
it's changed a little bit.
It's changed a lot. But I think that as we've changed together, we've really grown together. I think a lot of the reasons why and who Park City is today is really because of that independent spirit, that independent filmmaking that came here years ago. We've grown together in a lot of ways, and we've become better together. And, you know, not to mention the $165 million economic impact in terms of GDP to the state.
Yeah.
Obviously, the economic impact is incredibly important, but also the fact that it really celebrates who we are in our community, and we want to continue to do that. And we feel like we've put together a really great bid. We'd rather focus on 2025 and 2026 and wait for the news to respond about what that impact might be until we really know what the decision is. But we do want to thank Sundance. It's really our privilege to welcome Sundance to the town each year. We're so proud of what we've built together and really the beautiful leading role that they have played in our Park City story. So we're looking forward to the next act.
Yeah, almost running out of time, but maybe not the easiest thing to do in a quick amount of time, but can you talk a bit about what the chamber is hoping to achieve, or just the objectives with the legislative session just now starting there down in Salt Lake City?
Yeah, we're paying attention to a lot of the bills that are coming out that might impact business and the economy. You know, obviously we're really focused on making sure that there's a stable and predictable regulatory business environment for our businesses. We're watching several of the bills. In fact, we have a weekly newsletter that goes out. It'll go out every Monday. This will be the first one that goes out today. We also have a bill tracker so businesses can follow the bills that we're watching. And if anyone is interested in signing up for that newsletter as a member, that's a benefit. They can go to parkcitychamber.com and click on our legislative policy agenda. They can see the full policy agenda of and statements of which we're focusing on. We're so proud that not only our board, but also the Historic Park City Alliance, the Restaurant Association, and the Lodging Association all signed on to that legislative policy agenda. So we're spending a lot of time at the state legislature right now, and we'll continue to watch bills that might impact our businesses and let them know about it.
Yeah, we've been speaking with Park City Chamber Bureau CEO Jennifer Wesselhoff. Thanks so much for coming in this morning.
Thanks, Parker.